Thank you very much, Rebecca. It's a thrill to be back here in Southern California, where I did my postdoc 20 years ago. So as Jackie alluded to, obesity in pet dogs is probably just as much of a problem as it is in people. So just a few studies measure the actual prevalence of obesity and overweight in the dog population. One from Australia that I've noted here, where 33% of dogs were considered to be overweight and 7% obese. There's now data from France that indicates a similar prevalence of obesity in that country, and so we can imagine that in westernized countries that the obesity prevalence amongst dogs is probably quite similar around the world. The risk factors, lots of people try to wave off the risk factors as being something to do with things we can't control, like age or breed, but there are other risk factors that are conferred upon the dog by their owner, such as their propensity to feed the dog snacks, for example, their propensity to not walk the dogs, and it's also been found that dogs that live in a single dog household are more likely to be overweight than dogs that don't have anybody, or that do have somebody to play with. An interesting study that's nearly 40 years old from Great Britain also suggested that obese people and obese dogs frequently cohabited. And so these are interesting data that suggest that perhaps we can intervene on both populations at the same time. There are health risks of canine obesity, just as there are health risks to human obesity, and I've just listed a few of them here. The way that veterinarians assess canine obesity is a little bit different than the way it's done in humans. Because of breed differences, there's no such thing as a body mass index. However, veterinarians look at the shape of the dog. If you can see the dog's ribs, if you can easily palpate the dog's ribs, if they have an indent here at their waist, then that's a healthy, properly weighted dog, and then you can see that as dogs put on weight, their body condition score, BCS, is rated higher, and they lose those desirable physical properties. The treatment of canine obesity is fairly standard, I think. The veterinarians may have other things to add to this, but basically there's an initial reduction of food intake. And this is probably the most popular treatment. The owners are encouraged to eliminate treats to their dogs, and there is an encouragement of exercise, but similar to the situation that really exists in the human population, there's a lot of vagueness in these kind of recommendations, and so there aren't necessarily specific recommendations that veterinarians make as to how the owner can achieve this increase in physical activity. These are some data from a study that was published out of the University of Texas A&M, I think, looking at owner reports of exercise levels in their pet dogs. And interestingly enough, half of the owners rated their dogs as being very active. The numbers in blue are results from a study that I did using the exact same survey as Slater used in her study. Looking at dogs within a population that I'll describe to you a little bit later, but these were mainly people who were veterinary students or who worked in a veterinary college, and only 30% of those people rated their dogs as being very active. And I suspect that those people may have had a little bit more realistic idea of what very active means to a dog. I also looked at some of the data coming out of the AVMA, or the American Veterinary Medical Association, publications that would support the idea that we could intervene with dogs and help them to lose weight through an exercise program. And these are some of the data that you can find in those publications, and I think they've been well stated by some of the other speakers this afternoon. So we set out to develop an intervention for overweight and obese dogs, a physical activity intervention, based on the rationale that both people, overweight may coexist in households between the people and their dogs. We looked at the idea that people were concerned about their dog's health, that they considered dogs to be an important part of their family. And so this led us to this idea, as I said. Rebecca noted that I have been involved in something called the First Step Program for a number of years. This is a program that uses pedometers to motivate people to increase their physical activity. The pedometers are used for both monitoring and motivation. And we took this program, which was initially developed for type 2 diabetes patients, and introduced it into workplaces where we felt that the majority of workers would be quite sedentary. This was back in 2001. It involved less than 200 people in 5 workplaces in Prince Edward Island, which is where I was before I went to Edmonton. The program proved so popular in PEI that it eventually was rolled out in both community settings and additional workplaces to more than 3,000 Prince Edward Islanders. And then into junior high schools and elementary schools. There was a lending library or a lending program at the library. And then in 2005, we got this idea that we could have something called the Canine First Step Program. And it initially involved 24 dogs. So the objectives of the Canine First Step Program were to develop and implement a physical activity intervention that utilized pedometers on the dogs. So first of all, we had to validate that pedometers could actually be useful in dogs, then develop the intervention, and then test its efficacy. Now, the agency that funded our program was specifically concerned with the health of dogs, and so that was our primary objective. But of course, we had a hidden objective, and that was that by increasing the physical activity of the dogs, we would also increase the physical activity of the owners. So we purchased some pedometers from a company out of Texas, but they were importing Japanese pedometers specifically made for dogs that they call petometers. And that's...
They cost more.
They don't cost more, but they don't work as well. So that's the photo on the left, or the from the advertisement of the petometer. And then on the right is my dog, Emily, who's 15 years old, and she's proudly wearing her... pedometer that's just a regular Yamex pedometer for people that we've put on a chain around her neck, very similar to these chains. So if you don't want these chains, I could take them and use them for my dog studies. Anyway, so that's what it looks like when a dog wears a pedometer. Oops. And the first study that we did was to put the pedometers on dogs and then videotape them at different paces, doing a specified number of steps with their owners. And then we counted the steps on the videotape, and we counted the steps on the pedometers to see what the accuracy of the pedometers was. And we found that there was about a 15% inaccuracy in the pedometers when averaged over a whole bunch of dogs. And that, in fact, is not much different than the inaccuracy of pedometers when people wear them. So far, so good. Then we looked at how many steps a day dogs take. And to our surprise, we actually found that there was really no difference in the number of steps per day that small dogs took versus large dogs. And the dotted line across the bottom just shows you the average number of steps that people took while wearing pedometers in the same study. We also asked the owners to record how many minutes per day of activity their dog got. So this would be purposeful activity that the owner was involved with the dog. And we did see a significant correlation between the steps per day recorded on the pedometers and the minutes of activity as reported by their owners. We measured the body condition score of the dogs, and you can see that the more active dogs were, the lower their body condition score was. And remember that a lower body condition score is a good score, and a higher score is an obesity score. But you can also see that the dogs in our studies were not really obese, because their body condition scores are only going up to 7, and 8 and 9 is the most obese category. Whoops, keep doing that. What's really interesting is that the data look very similar to some that we collected from people, in that the more active people were, the lower their BMI tended to be. And you can even imagine that the slope of the line is almost the same. And lastly, we correlated dog steps with owner steps. And if we just looked at a day-to-day step basis, we did not see a very strong correlation. But if we added up all the steps taken over a week for the dog and taken over a week for the human or the owner, then we do see a significant correlation emerging. So the more active an owner is, the more active their dog tends to be as well. So our interventions was based on the First Step program. And basically, we start out with a facilitator. There's meetings held between the owners and the facilitator with the dogs present. An important part of these meetings is that the owners and the dogs and the facilitator all go for a walk together at each meeting. After the 3 weeks, they're on their own to try and adhere to the program as best they could to continue to set behavioral goals for their dog and to record the results. In the meetings, the owners received a program overview. There was discussion of lots of things that relate to behavioral outcomes, the gains and losses, the impediments, the barriers. As I said, there was a walk with the dog, and there was goal setting. The pedometers and the owners wore pedometers every day during waking hours. Actually, the dogs wore them 24 hours a day. The owner had to implement behavioral changes in order to help the dog achieve its goals. The pedometer provided the feedback, the motivation, and there was an activity calendar in which all of the data were recorded. During the adherence phase, the owners and dogs continued to record their steps to set goals. We sent them a motivational postcard to keep them going halfway through, and then we met to wrap up the program after 12 weeks. We measured a bunch of outcomes that I'll describe to you. And these are the baseline data. The owner BMI was close to the obese cutoff. So, and the dogs, by definition, had to be overweight to get into the program. These are the steps per day data from the dogs and their owners. We had a control group that just wore a pedometer at the beginning and at the end. The dogs in the FSP started out significantly higher at the beginning and didn't really change until the end, whereas in the owners, there was a statistically significant increase in their physical activity from the beginning to the end. Although the average data didn't really support the fact that pedometers could increase walking in dogs, we did see that 4 out of 6 dogs in the FSP group did actually increase their physical activity, and as did the owners. We measured the body condition score at the beginning and the end. The dogs in the FSP had an average higher decrease in body condition score, but it wasn't statistically significant. The owners, on the other hand, did have a statistically significant reduction in their BMI. So in conclusion, we found that pedometers can accurately measure physical activity in dogs. However, the data that we have so far, which admittedly is a very small population of dogs, suggested that the pedometer interventions are more successful in increasing physical activity in people than in their dogs. This was the team, and I'd just like to point out Maggie, who's standing with me in the top photo. She was a veterinary student at the time who led all of the groups and collected all the data. She was fantastic. And the last slide is just some acknowledgments from the funders. Thank you.
Thank you.